Good afternoon and welcome then to the next episode of the BECBC podcast. We've got a special episode today. Me and Rihanna are so pleased to be joined by our new patron of the cluster, Marcia Reid Fotheringham. So first of all, Marcia, welcome.
Thank you. Welcome to all of you. It's great to be talking to you.
Brilliant. Well, it's nice to have you here. And we would love to have done this in person, but obviously with the current climate that we're in, Zoom seemed the most appropriate way of doing this, actually. So I'm sure that the cluster membership will get to know you better through this, but also in the future, hopefully they'll meet you in person when we can get back to seeing each other's faces without being on in front of a computer screen, whatever that may be.
Actually, I'm anxiously looking forward to that. I think I'm certainly, like a lot of people, a little tired of Zoom. And it would be nice to have the person-to-person contact. So I'm looking forward to the time that we can all be together, sit down and chit-chat properly.
I massively miss it. I work at Energist, so this is where you'd normally be coming for your member meetings. So it's a big difference for us doing everything on Zoom.
Well, not only that, for the actual shadow board, I very cleverly, I thought, worked out a time where the shadow board would get to meet me first. I worked this out with Ruth first over a meal. And got Ivan to agree to pay for the meal. So I thought, fantastic. So it's a little disappointing that this is the way we're doing it. But I have decided that I'm going back to Ivan to say, what about our meal? So we'll have to do that in the future.
Brilliant. So Marcy, then, without me sort of giving you a long formal introduction, I thought it'd be nice if you can give us a formal introduction to who you are as a person, what sort of roles that you currently undertake, because obviously I know it's far and wide ranging. So it's over to you really to sort of introduce yourself.
Yeah. Okay. You obviously know my name. So beyond that, my past, or when I say money-making history, was really being a psychologist. So I've been a psychologist, or had been, because I'm now retired, had been a psychologist for almost 40 years. In addition to that, because the state system is very different than the UK system, I also needed to, because I need to make money, quite a bit of money, that also meant that I wanted to be a good manager. So lots of managerial roles, really wheeling and dealing a lot of money in mental health. So making sure I was supporting good programs and activities related to well-being. Beyond that, once I moved here, so I've been here now 24 years, I had the pleasure of being pursued for a psychologist job with the NHS. It took me a little while to agree to that. It takes me a little while to agree to things because I always want to make sure I'm really going to like it before agreeing. That way I have no regrets, and whoever it is who's hired me or is working with me has no regrets. So promised to work with the NHS for 1 year, and 10 years later, I was still there. So promptly retired on my 10th anniversary. Luckily for people like me, the NHS has a rule in mental health that you can retire at 55. So retired when I turned 55. That was now some time ago.
Brilliant. Never. So as well as that role then, you've obviously got some other roles that people may know you for, yeah. You know, such as yeah. Your JP, magistrate, and other things. So would you care to tell us a bit more about those then as well?
Yeah, the magistrate position, I was lucky enough to be down in London. My survival, while I love Cumbria, and if anything, have learned to love Cumbria more, in my early days, I needed cities. So I would often go down to London. While I was in London, I picked up a newspaper and it had an ad for magistrates. I didn't know what a magistrate was, but quickly came to understand what that was and decided that I should apply to be a magistrate here in Carlisle. Did apply in 2001, so it's now been 19 years that I've been a magistrate. And as is my style, you know, I begin on step one, but, you know, I'm very much the kind of person who always likes to be in a leadership role. So moved into leadership, ended up becoming chair of the bench and also the Northwest Regional Chair, which means I represented magistrates from Manchester all the way up to Cumbria.
Yeah.
Very big role, perhaps bigger then than it is now, because you could actually impact change Things have changed a lot now where, you know, it's clear that there's just one central government creating all the rules for everyone. It was a little different when I was in the leadership role in the magistrate system. However, did that, and throughout my time, I've also been a director and owner of our dental practices. Had two practices, one in Brampton, pretty large practice in Brampton, and a teeny tiny practice in Alston. And when I say teeny tiny, it's one day a week. So we still own that one because we kept that. And the other practice is now owned by Bupa. So moving beyond all of that, we could take up the whole half hour just talking about my job. Moving beyond all of that, somewhere in there, I was very nicely and wonderfully asked to become High Sheriff. I know we're going to talk a little bit about that later. So committed a lot of time, because there's a four-year run-up time to be in High Sheriff. Did my High Sheriff year, and then I remember my husband saying to me, so what are you going to do now? And decided I had to stay busy. I like being busy. It's good for me, and it's good for everybody else if I am busy. It's probably really good for Jim, too, coming to think of it. Anyways, became busy with a number of boards. One of the realities of being more of a public figure, which I've always been, let me backtrack a little bit and tell you why I've always been a bit of a public figure here in Cumbria. About 21 years ago, I made a bit of noise about Morris dances. I like Morris dances. I have nothing against them at all, but I really cannot tolerate offensive type behavior and concerning behavior. In this instance, Morris dancers were planning to do a production, Blackened Faces dancing to an old slave song. I objected to that, and I objected to that on very obvious grounds. But through all of that and my objections, I was told no one can change it. And that's a challenge to me. So, you know, I learned to speak up loudly about the fact that things do need to change. That's not all right. My suggestion to the Morris dance was do your dance without blackened faces and to the old slave song if you really want to, or blacken your faces, because I understood there was some historic means for that. Blacken your faces, but don't do it to an old slave song. I was told they had to do both and they had to be hand in hand. So after working with the council who were putting on this production, I decided I'd just call the press and make my voice heard. It did make my voice heard, so much so that one day before the event, I was coming home, and you know the placards that are outside news agents. There was a comment, racial incident in Brampton. So I went in and asked my husband, what happened in Brampton? And he said, well, you happened. So the bottom line of that was it had become public. To my surprise, maybe, the Morris dancers did dance, no blackened faces, no slave song. So it got settled. But that was the beginning of me being a voice to hear, and perhaps some would say to reckon with in Cumbria. So moving now back to talking about the future, after the High Sheriff bit, wanting to be busy, people did know of me. I became very active with a lot of boards. I'm on 7 boards. All of the boards that I'm on are boards that have focuses that I either love or want to know more about. For example, I like opera. I don't love opera. I like opera, but I want to know more about it. So when the Cumbria Opera Company, who knew we had one, contacted me, after a little bit of thought, I said, yeah, you know. So I'm also on, I've been on Tully House's board for about 4 years now. Again, learned a lot about museums, so I was pleased actually to accept theirs. I'm on Cumbria Victims Charitable Trust. They give money to victims of crime. Multicultural Cumbria, they do a lot of performances and touch base with BAME communities. Cumbria Community Foundation raise an awful lot of money, and I do mean an awful lot of money. They're very clever at this, and give money to a lot of charities. You don't necessarily have to be a charity to get their money, but they give a lot. Grassmere Sports. That was another one of those, why am I considering this? But during my High Sheriff year, I spent a day with them and just loved what they were doing. So when they asked, while I committed my husband, Jim, to doing the activities, I felt comfortable committing me to being on the board, so did that. And most recently, I've joined the University of Lancaster's council, same as a board, but they call it a council. So I'm doing all of that. You know, I've accepted the patron position with Beck, which I'm really pleased about. And I'm also a patron for AWAS, AWAS Cumbria. AWAS means voice. It's another organization in Cumbria that really pays attention to the BAME community.
Brilliant. So, Marcy, we'd really love to know a bit more about what made you decide to take on the role of BC patron, because you said before that you take a long time to decide things and make decisions. So what was it that tempted you with this role compared to some of the other things? Obviously, you've got a wide collection of boards under your belt, but why BC?
You know what? I turned down a lot of boards. So in all honesty, the reason I wanted to be a patron of yours is because you're brilliant. and what I mean by that, I have to be honest, I was asked, but again, being asked means very little to me, because that is generally the first step, but it's not often the end step. So after being asked, and certainly before saying yes, I went and did my homework on you. I looked you up, learned from other people who are not necessarily members, so both members and non-members, about what you really do and how you do it. My bottom line is you're an impressive group of people. I like the fact that you are not, for those of us who are elderly or older, I don't mean to insult us, but I like the fact that you're not old. That you know, you've got youngsters, and remember, for me, anybody who's under 50 is considered a youngster, doing the work that you're doing. Also, you're about as much inclusion as possible. You are about the future. What you're doing has to be done for our own survival. And for me, it was too much of a good temptation for me to say no. Also, it was made easier. If I were to be a board member, that might have been more difficult. But to be a patron, technically, I get to do a little less and I get to have a little bit more fun. So that for me is a nice option. That's why.
Brilliant, love it. And obviously, Marcia, we're really pleased to have you with us anyway. And as I mentioned at the start, it's going to be great to see how over the next couple of years your sort of tenure as patron unfolds. And once we're back to being face-to-face, I'm sure you'll like to get to know some of the members better.
Yeah.
And really get,
yeah,
get your claws into it.
Yeah.
Wait,
can I just interrupt you? That is what I hope. The reality is I'm only going to be as good as you make me. So that does mean that while it can't happen now, even though technically all of you can have my email address, so any of you can get in touch, but I expect more contact will produce more working better together and more effectively together. So I want that because I need to know what your ideas are about wanting a patron. What is it that you'd like to see me do? I know that I want to be a number one cheerleader for you. But again, you might have different forums that you think I should participate in. You might have different ways that you'd like to see me work. I want to do that.
Yes, it's certainly a two-way relationship. And I think if the membership can push back at you as well as vice versa, yeah, that'll be mutually beneficial, I think. Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. So the next question is sort of two questions in one, then, Marcia. It's really a bit about why you've chosen Cumbria as your home, you know, from all the places that you've been in the world, why Cumbria? And because me and Rihanna, we lead on the Cumbria Better Place to Live and Work theme, in which we're trying to promote Cumbria as a fantastic place, as I say, to look, to live and to work in because of all the opportunity it has. So the question is sort of, why have you chosen Cumbria as your home? But also maybe you might tie into that where sort of home was for you across your stages, because I know you were born in London, weren't you, originally?
Born in London, but raised in New York. I feel like that commercial. you know. So definitely raised in New York. And if I really stop and think and anybody asks me, where is home? Obviously now I say Cumbria, but a lot of my heart is really in New York. So raised in Long Island, which is a suburb of the city. My reality is I'm here because I fell in love and married Jim. I'm not quite sure where I would be if Jim wanted to live somewhere else. He's a climber when he's not busy being a dentist. And as a climber, that really does mean he wants and needs those climbing areas in and around the Lake District. So living close to Brampton, which is where the practice has always been, is important to him. We considered us both living in the States, but he had kids from a prior relationship, and I'm a psychologist. I can't take somebody's father away from them. It's just wrong. And I had no kids of my own, so it was easy for me to decide to live here. So living here has been up and down. Took a long time for me to get used to the weather. I had never seen sheep or cows. And in all honesty, I still sometimes don't understand why people love the full vista of the green that's out there. You know, give me some buildings, give me some car exhaust and all of that, and I'm pretty
true happy. City girl at heart.
Yeah. Absolutely. Adam, you asked another question, which in there, what...
It was basically about sort of, you know, why have you chosen Cumbria as your home? But obviously that links into kind of your steps in terms of where you've been geographically, but also your career steps. So obviously London to New York, back to the UK. Within that, clearly you've set up businesses, as you say, and been very successful in that. So it'd be great to hear a bit more about your journey doing that as well.
Well, in addition to that, you also asked about sort of my thoughts about Cumbria as a better living place.
Yes, true.
I do have to say, what Cumbria has and what I really do like is when you actually look at it beyond the environment, Cumbria has some great people. And I like people. So getting to know the people of Cumbria, to me, has been one of the strengths of me living here. People have been amazingly kind to me. So I like that. I encourage that. So I'm pleased for that to happen and want to encourage it as much as possible. In reference to a better place, I had never lived in a place that was so white. You know, because coming from New York, I didn't remember my existence in London, so I don't really refer to that so much, but certainly coming from New York, it's a diverse community. So I just remember saying to Jim at times in those early days, does anybody else Black live here? You know, which is obviously not a true sin, because there are people of difference who live here. But I couldn't see them, didn't see them. I'm still often the only Black person in the room. And if it's a place that doesn't know me, I can shut a room up very quickly just by appearing. But I also believe that I am happy to take advantage of the fact that I can help Cumbria sometimes figure out ways of encouraging minorities. You may or may not know that somebody, I can't remember who it was, within Beck asked me to write a paper about attracting minorities to business. They gave me a limited number of words. I can't write in that kind of limited number of words. So I wrote a full big number. And gave that to them. They really wanted it to be much smaller. I refused. Ultimately, what I said was, I'm here really for Beck. So put it on the Beck website. People, whoever wants, can have access to that. And I can just give apologies to the person who really asked me to do it. That is my way of contributing. Bottom line is, I do think Cumbria can do some things to attract more minorities to what is sometimes a difficult place to live, but generally a nice place to live. And one of the things that I do think has happened is allies, and by allies, racial allies. You two, just naturally looking at you both, I can guess would be racial allies. You want to see justice. You want to see fairness. Those kinds of people are around all over the place. that makes it easier for somebody like me to like where I am.
Brilliant. I'm sure we'll come more to that later, Marcia. You know, some very good points, actually. And some of your comments around the high sheriff duties obviously feed into that whole movement as well, of course. Mm-hmm. So the question that I also asked in there was about your career steps then, really. It's sort of where did you, sort of starting from, you know, sort of growing up in New York, where, and then you're sort of now in Carlisle. It's sort of, what were the steps in between that? And why did you sort of choose to make those steps? Apart from gym, of course.
Yes, definitely apart from gym. But my reality is, and this is more reality of being part of a Black family, the notion of going to university was not a notion that you have an option about. My father was very clear about me and my brother, we're going to university. University is a very different experience in the States. For me to go to a good university, which is what I did go to, my parents had to remortgage the house. Really hard step. You know, the price of your university education now is still lower than it was when I went to university in the 70s. I mean to always do well, which means the more education I have, the better I'm gonna do. So 8 years of university. 8 years of university to become a fully qualified psychologist. Important for me to do that. I was happy with all of those years and found ways of doing it my way. So managed to become what they call a residence director, which means I had a lovely two-bedroom apartment at the bottom of one of those big buildings where students, you know, I had 300 students that I took care of. Yeah. But that meant they paid for my education. So I've always found ways to figure out a system that allows me to sort of do things my way without paying top dollar for it. 8 years after, left and only applied for one job at Emerson College. Emerson College is where a number of stars went to university. Can be quite shallow at times. They had a good job. I wanted that job, and luckily, I got that job. Stayed there for a little while and then moved on because that job was really about being an academic counselor. It really wasn't doing what I wanted to ultimately do with my life. So started working as a full psychologist for first a school for special needs. These were profoundly disabled children. Children who were often dropped off by their parents because they're too hard for the parents or the family to deal with. And once they're dropped off, parents are really good at just leaving their kids and forgetting all about it. I worked a way where you want a little therapy, you get a little therapy if you see your child. So therapy was free to them as long as they came in and saw their child. And that, you know how it is in the States. We all think we should have at least two therapists. So, you know, that worked very nicely for a lot of years. Then started to work for the state of Massachusetts. And that's where the management job came in. Also, AtlantiCare Medical Center. Worked for them for about 13 years. Did really well, so much so when I left, to my pleasure, they gave me a chair, which, you know, with my name on it, which I just thought was fantastic. From the the Massachusetts State Mental Health Association, that was the job I was doing when I met Jim. So left there when I moved here. Gotta say, Jim gave the most romantic speech because this was during the year that the UK lost Princess Di. So Jim came to the job, my job with my staff, and talked about losing a princess and bringing one back. Isn't that romantic?
Lady.
So it was great. It was great. So moved here, didn't work for a couple of years, as I've already said, and then started working for the NHS. All of my jobs have required me to work much, much more than 8 hours a day. They've also all encouraged me to interact with people that I don't always like, but I always have to figure out how to work best with. And luckily, I've been able to do that.
That's great. So one thing I'm pretty interested in is obviously your background in mental health. I think it's a really really discussed topic at the minute, especially in the situation, I think, especially with young people, they're going to be the highest, age group really that are going to be affected by the recession and unemployment. So I think we're going to be really relying on mental health services. As part of mine and Adam's shadow board theme of Better Place to Live and Work, we'd like to incorporate some aspects of mental health services, whether it's signposting. So we just wanted to gauge your opinions really on how you think Cumbria could improve, what you think of the services it offers at the minute. Obviously, it'd be great to tap in on your background of working in mental health industry. So definitely we'd like to make touch contact with you in future.
One of the difficulties as I answer your question is I have been terribly spoiled by the United States system. Remember the stigma related to mental health, the numerous opportunities for mental health services is so vastly different. It's well supported in the States. It's understood, like I said, you know, you'll go out to lunch with girlfriends or friends in general, and in the middle of the conversation, you'll say, well, my therapist said, you know, because everybody has one and everybody's really comfortable about talking about having a therapist. Here, the stigma is still quite alive. And it's really hard, I think, for people to not only acknowledge that they might need help, but once they've acknowledged it, actually getting help. And that was the same when I even worked in the health service. It was appallingly bad and shameful that sometimes we saw kids in need, teenagers in need, that had to wait for almost a year to be seen. That's not good enough. It's just not good enough.
A lot can happen in a year.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Remember, they were in need before they even contacted.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, so I feel anything that anybody can do, and things have changed. There's now private mental health services that's available, but that does assume you've got some money to pay for that. And I know that the NHS says that they put more money into mental health. I don't always see that. Certainly, I had a friend who was reacting to the virus, who's really suffered. I'm a person who knows the system. I've used the system. And I've got to say, getting through the system to get her services was incredibly difficult. So I feel we, certainly in Cumbria, don't have enough to offer. I think being a rural county, I think there are lots of times when things are given out based on population numbers, and we suffer. So the more that we can all do to sort of change that picture and to help things feel different for people in need, and there are lots of people in need, the better.
Definitely. Talking about it is definitely the first step, breaking down that stigma.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that, Marcia. And it'd be great to pick up that at a later stage as well and sort of talk more about it and perhaps do something with the cluster as a whole and sort of give some more of your insights to the whole membership. That would be absolutely great, really. So, yeah, thank you. Moving back to your patron position then, you're obviously taking over from our first patron from 2018, our inaugural patron, Professor John Fife. I'm not sure how much you know about John or if you've met him at all, or be it on Zoom or in person, but any thoughts you had on John as a person and perhaps sort of the contribution that he's made to the cluster in his tenure?
I've got to be honest with you. I've met John only once. We've done emails back and forth, but the actual meeting of John was worth much more than any email I could have received. He's a bit of a live wire. And it's clear that he cares and has cared a lot for what's gone on with MBEC. He's the kind of person that makes it hard for somebody like me, because I feel as if I've got to be as good. And he's a difficult act to follow. So I don't know enough about the things that he's actually done. Because when we actually got together, it was more of an introduction. And I think he did what I didn't expect him to do, which was he spent more time telling me how important it was for me to consider back, instead of talking about what he should have been talking about, which was his own contribution to back. So that is something that I still feel will come, because he has left a legacy. He's done a lot of good things. Everybody tells me that, but I can't put the specifics on that. When it comes to me, my hope is to understand a little bit more, one, about what he's done, what you want, what I feel I can give, and then get on with doing it.
Absolutely, yes. I think, I mean, both you and John are seeming like very big characters, so I think you'll have a you're a good act to follow, John. Anyway, Marcia,
I hope so.
And obviously, we look forward to sort of seeing how it develops as things go on. Anyway, the next question we had really was about it was really about taking over the patronage in this difficult time. Really, that you know, it's a very unusual year for the world, for the UK, for Cumbria, our region, and it's really just any thoughts you had about what it meant taking on the role in this time we're in, and perhaps a bit about how what the sort of challenges might be facing our region over the next couple of years, and any sort of advice or thoughts you had on that, really, Marcia.
I think when I first discussed this, it was before COVID existed, which is why I can talk about having met John and having met some of you on the shadow board as well as the regular board. So it was before we knew that we had to be extremely careful. Since then, it's clear that we are in the middle of a terrible crisis. It's been awful for almost everybody. I don't know anybody who's not been affected by all of this. So it's a change in time, because I think whether we like it or not, we're going to have to do things differently. I don't think we all know what that means when we say it. So one advantage of me coming on board now is that I get to learn with you as we start changing. That's a true advantage for somebody like me, because I get to hopefully impact on that change as it's happening. I think it's interesting to me. I went to one of your meetings way back. The lockdown was going on, but in a funny way, none of that was reflected in the meeting that we had. And I found that a little bizarre. So I remember after the meeting, I didn't want to disrupt the meeting, because all of the people who were present seemed absolutely fine with it. I was the only one saying, how come they haven't mentioned COVID? So I remember getting to Ivan afterwards and asking, you know, what's the data on COVID? How many businesses have been affected? What is the effect or the impact? And the data was sketchy, I felt that wasn't good enough, you know. So again, one of the things that I feel I can sometimes do, it'll give people headaches, but I think we should have a complete picture of the impact and the effect it's having on not only business, but workers, you know. I know that people want to continue making money. Everybody wants to do well. But there's a people factor and a human factor in here that I don't think we can lose sight of. So my hope is that we keep looking at that. And sometimes if I can just be an agitator to make that happen, I'm okay with that. You know, it gets really bad when somebody sees you coming and they think, oh God, here she comes. You know, but sometimes that's the way to work effectively. You know, so I'm pleased that I'm here at this time. I think it is a tough time. I think, and I hope, I'm given the impression that people can ask me almost anything. The one thing you will get from me is my honest answer. If I don't know, I'll tell you I don't know. But if I feel as if I don't know, but I can do something about it, I will. Right. I don't really fib about that kind of stuff.
So, ties in quite well with our next question then. We've touched on your obviously role as High Sheriff. We'd really like to go into detail on what you achieved. Who did you agitate back then? Obviously, it was from March 2019 and you just handed it back over in March 2020. So what did you achieve in that year? Is anything that stands out?
You know what is, I know that Adam said it very nicely, I'm a big character, and I've learned that I am, because I didn't used to describe myself quite as that. I wanted my year to go well. I worked hard to make my year well. You've heard me say that there's a 4-year run-up from being called and asked, would you be High Sheriff, to the actual becoming High Sheriff. In those 4 years, I worked out and mapped out lots of things that I felt I could do. So as High Sheriff of Cumbria, I feel like I raised a lot of money for charity, but along the way, I had more activities than any other high share, which I'm pleased about. Did more things, meaning wanted to touch young people. When I say older people, things that I don't really like, but felt I needed to address, like hospices. I'm a chicken and punk about things like that, but I still felt as if I needed to address that. And ultimately made the high sheriff role more visible than any other high sheriff has done.
It was certainly a very high profile appointment, though, Marcia, wasn't it? Of course, you were only the third black high sheriff for Wales, but obviously the second only female, and certainly Cumbria's first black high sheriff at all. So that's clearly a very historic appointment, and something that I'm sure it's something that you're very proud of, I'm sure, for that reason.
I'm more than proud of it. I still say, how did that happen? You know, because it is so, it's so unlike what I expect across the UK, but certainly what I would never have expected in Cumbria. It just shows that you can sometimes be wrong. In this instance, I was certainly wrong, and grateful that whoever it is who makes these decisions, I know it's a committee of people who come together once a year and they decide who the high sheriff is going to be for the 4 years prior, okay? Yeah. Whoever that group of people were that year, I am so grateful that they thought I had done a good job when no one's looking, because it's not as if you can, you know, you don't run for this kind of position. Mm. Somebody just chooses you. And in my years, certainly throughout my life, I've never been given anything. I've always really worked hard for everything that I have. The high sheriff's role was a give. Somebody gave me that, and I was beyond proud of it.
I thought it was very apt as well, Marcia, that it's obviously Black History Month this month, and I saw that one of the things that you did as high sheriff was go to unveil the John Kent plaque, obviously the first Black British policeman. Yeah. So can you just tell us a bit about that, really? That's a very great historical story as well, and it's very nice that you were there as the person to unveil it.
Absolutely. Again, one of the lovely things is that people knew they could reach out anytime. And when it was reaching out for something that was Black in Cumbria, I felt it was a double honor to participate in that. So yeah, they asked me to do it. It's located in Whitehaven.
Oh, is it in Whitehaven?
No, Maryport.
Maryport.
Maryport. I had to think where it was. Yeah. It's in Maryport. It's a simple blue plaque, but his history is amazing because, again, he fought hard for it. The way the history is told, and I don't really know what the truth is, but the way the history is told, he ended up not doing so well toward the end of his policeman experience. But certainly he has the role. And for the day, they found some of his family members. So they were there on the day. We all gave speeches because it's a huge deal. And for me, I did a speech there, and then later on that same day, gave a speech in one of the libraries. The library said it was one of the most well-attended events that they had. And it was all about just participating in Black History Month and acknowledging actually history that many people in Cumbria don't know about. So it's great.
Brilliant. So we've had a really good in-depth look at your career history and that sort of thing, but we'd like members to be able to see you a bit more of a personal side. So your husband, Jim, he likes climbing. Do you like to get involved with him, or is what about your hobby?
No.
No. We know you don't like Cumbria as all the landscapes.
No,
you like cities.
I don't like Cumbria. I just have a love for cities. But having said that, my love for Cumbria grew immensely when I learned how to ride horses. I learned that here. And put me on a horse, and I think that is what Cumbria's fells are made for, because it's terrific. No, Jim is mad. My husband is mad. He's always been a climber, based on his parents, since he was, you know, a young kid. And, you know, I consider him, certainly, because he's climbed with Chris Bonington, Doug Scott, and a lot of big names in climbing. Wow. He's one of those people who I would say is one of the big boys of climbing. However, that means he is not only crazy, it is just a part of our lives. You know how you wake up and you brush your teeth? Jim wakes up and he thinks climbing. You mean I'm not going to work today? I can climb, right? And for me, I didn't know, even when I first met him, I just didn't know that people climbed. I mean, truly, again, city girl, who knows about climbing? And when I did understand, I still didn't realize the passion and the total preoccupation that true climbers have. So I've learned over the years, I have gone climbing. So, you know, I feel as if I can say with true experience that I don't like it and would not be doing it. I went climbing in France, and once I got up, whatever it was, I just got to the top, and yes, I can admire the views, but you can get there on foot. I just couldn't see the point. I'm certainly not climbing material, but I'm happy to support climbers, and have actually done, meaning created, developed, and run my own climbing expedition. That was how Jim and friends climbed the Rock of Gibraltar.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So you mentioned when Jim woke up in the morning thinking about what he was going to do with his day. When you wake up in the morning and you're not thinking about dentistry or any of your businesses or your magistrate work or mental health, what do you wake up and think about on your day off?
You know what? If it's a beautiful sunny day, I'm always thinking, maybe I could go riding. One of my best experiences was riding down in, it's Milton. Am I saying it right, Andrew? Adam?
Milton, possibly.
It's down way south. There's a prison in that area. Anyways, they've got those beautiful big horses. They're gorgeous. Okay,
Milham. Oh, they have the horses that ride on the beach. The horses that ride on the beach, is it? Yes.
Yeah.
Near Sylcroft, it is. Yeah, Sylcroft Beach. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, that is just a beautiful experience. So if I have my option, that's certainly what I would love doing. But I'm also big on can't do it on the roads. So I'm saying this so that everybody knows I don't break the law. I'm also big on riding my scooter. You know, I've got one of those electric scooters. So I think that's good. I'm not a bike rider, you know, but love riding my scooter. There are times when we go out with the grandchildren. And we're scooter riding. They're in Whitley Bay, so they've got that long promenade. And at this point, the cops have allowed us to do it, so I've got to assume it's considered all right.
Brilliant. So our last question, really, Marcia, is it's the one that we ask all of our guests, is if you could go back to being, say, in your late teens, early 20s, what's the one piece of advice that you now know that you'd want to pass back to your younger self?
You know, it would be the advice that I'd give myself now. It's also the advice I'd give you, your youngsters. Remember, you're under 50, okay? I would say just don't let any, whether it feels like a failure, any hiccup, any obstacle, don't let it stop you from what you want to do. Decide what's important for you and just do it. I do think I've been lucky enough or determined enough, whichever word you want to use, to have that happen in my life. And I think for me, it's been a good thing.
Brilliant. Well, thanks for everything, Marcia. That's wonderful. So from myself and Rihanna, the BECBC board and the whole membership, obviously, we're delighted to have you with us. Thank you for sharing all this insight today. I'm sure we'll hear much more about it in the coming months and years as your patron. So thank you very much. And hopefully we'll hear from you soon.
Listen, I need to thank both of you. What's lovely when you do an interview is when it feels comfortable and when you feel as if you can just give whatever answer you want, which sometimes doesn't happen. So the only other thing I have is to ask you to please, I don't know if it's normal, but could somebody please make sure my email address is on your site so that if people do want to be in touch, they can. If you are in touch, make sure you explain to me why you're in touch. Otherwise, I won't respond.
We can certainly do that. Yes. The new website, it can definitely go onto there, your number. So get in touch with that with our patron here, and you'll be inundated with emails, I'm sure. But yes.
You know what? Yeah. If that's my problem, it's a good problem.
Brilliant. And I'm sure the shadow board will be in touch as well.
Yes, I'm expecting that. Well, we've got unfinished business. We've got a meal to have. So
yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, then. I'll see you.
Thank you.
Thank you.